that you wish to take up first?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the bills are all tied together. Let me just, if I can start by just offering an explanation to the committee of what we'd like to do, because we do have a delete everything amendment to Senate File 3363. So that's the bill ultimately I'll be working from. But I want to offer that amendment after we go through the bills, if that's okay with the committee. This is a project, Mr. Chairman and members, that members of both the Senate and the House have worked on over these last number of months. There have been a number of people involved, spearheaded primarily on the Senate side by Senator Rest, and I understand she'll be here shortly. And what the attempt is to try to do several things with the budget process. And Mr. Chairman, if members would allow me to, without addressing the particular bills, just kind of set the stage. There are three or several broad areas relative to what we're attempting to do. The first is information. I have found it a little bit frustrating over the years, and this is not just over the past several years as chairman of the full committee, but going back to when I was first a budget chairman a number of years ago, I've been somewhat frustrated with what I think has been declining information. And of course, as state government and its responsibilities and what we appropriate money for gets more and more complex, it becomes a little bit more difficult, I think, for the Department of Finance to provide more and more information. So I don't suggest that finance is purposely keeping anything from us or trying to hide anything from us. I told Mr. Gustafson and Mr. Showalter before we began, and I've had the chance to talk to them about these issues. They're going to express they're going to testify, and I think have some concerns with some of the proposed legislation. But I indicated to them that I wish I'd kept one of my budget books from 15 years ago, or even back when I was in the House, because I think the budget pages were somewhat more readable and somewhat more complex to the extent that there was more historical data provided to us in making decisions. We were able to look at a look back, I think, in somewhat greater detail. We also had information relative to the agency requests and not just simply the governor's recommendation. So part of the group of bills is to make sure we have access to information, both in terms of the budget pages themselves, in terms of promulgation of the budget. There's part of the legislation calls for the Department of Finance to provide information to the legislature relative to the ongoing work in the promulgation of the budget. And I might add, Mr. Chairman and members, that this is something that other states have done. It's not a unique request that we've put together. Part of the task force work was a study, or at least an overview, of what's happened in many other states. A second general category is that of fiscal notes. One of the real frustrations, and Senator Berglund can speak to this probably better than anybody at the table, is difficulty in getting fiscal notes from the agencies, and then once the fiscal notes arrive, having really no avenue to question the fiscal notes. And I think we've all experienced where we have a piece of finance legislation, we request a fiscal note, it comes back, we have questions, we think in some instances, and I'm not sure I would do it any differently, you know, if I were the governor or if I were the commissioner of a particular agency. Certainly at times, some of the fiscal notes, from our perspective, might have a political slant. And so there's really no avenue to take a look at the fiscal note process. So that's another grouping of bills. Third grouping of bills is related to technology information. And certainly, you know, if we look at the state budget over the last number of years, we are spending an increasing amount of money and time within the agencies in terms of technology. So there's an effort to take a closer look at that. That's something that Senator Rest in particular has been spending some time on. And the fourth grouping of bills are fiscal stability. And it's a couple of our, I hate to use the word standbys, but issues that members are familiar with. I've had legislation since 2003 to reinstate inflation in the budget forecast. And so there is a piece of legislation that does that. And members will recall not just simply what happened with the tax bill last year, but we passed my standalone bill off the floor of the Senate, I think, sometime in February or March. I forget which month. But it's an issue that I've argued for since 2002. And with all the discussion about this issue over this past year, I don't mean to hold myself out as any great purveyor of legislative wisdom, but I think in 2002, when we took inflation out of the budget forecast, I think I was the only person who raised any objection. I just want to make it clear in suggesting that it wasn't like members who were serving then will not, I guess around the table all of us were. Nobody will recall that I said anything on the floor of the Senate, but I remember talking to Roger Moore, Senator Moore, in a conversation, wondering if it was a good idea. I think that was the extent of my dissent, because we didn't really give it a close look. But starting in 2003, I have had legislation to reinstate inflation in the budget forecast. The other major bill relative to that is something that we talked about with at some length last year, and that is the attempt to have the budget reserve set at 5% of the general fund. That's the percentage that the state's economists will suggest is an appropriate amount for the budget reserve. Now, obviously, as we sit here today in deficit, we're not going to find an additional $600 million, $900 million somewhere in the budget and add to the budget reserve. But in times of significant surpluses, the hope is we can augment the reserve. So that's the other piece of the fiscal stability. The last piece, and we'll get to that right now, is to try to re-engage the state in the Minnesota Milestones Project. Senator Clark is the person who's been involved with that and has the particular legislation. So, Mr. Chairman, that's an overview of what we have in front of us this morning. The hope is that I had thought originally, and I was more than happy to share the responsibility with other legislators who have been working on these issues. I was not looking necessarily to have an omnibus budget reform bill, coupled with everything else that's going on. But the decision was made, I think, particularly given where the House had decided, or how the House had decided to handle these matters, to do everything in a single bill. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, we've had a chance to go through the individual bills. I thought that I would then introduce the Delete Everything Amendment. Mr. Watson has prepared a bill summary to the Delete Everything Amendment. I also want to draw members' attention not simply to the bill summaries we have for the individual bills, but also Mr. Mossman has put together a paper titled Minnesota Budget Process Requirements, and he provides some historic background in terms of the budget process and some of the supporting statutes, current statutes. So I would draw members' attention to that. There are people who would like to testify, both people in support of the legislation, and as I indicated, finance has some concerns and would like to offer some testimony as well.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen, while you're collecting the list of concerns, you might add to your list that now we're not getting the fiscal notes in a timely enough fashion to even be able to question them. I don't know if you've noticed that, but we've had, in my division, only preliminary fiscal notes on every bill that we've had this year, and we've had difficulty getting final fiscal notes. And in my area of the budget, there's a lot of interaction, and we're now only just now getting the interaction effects in terms of the budget reductions that we have proposed.
Sir Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, when I began a couple of minutes ago, and mentioned the fiscal note, as you know, I referenced you in particular, because what Senator Berglund has stated is correct. We've had, in particular with the Health and Human Services Division, a great deal of difficulty in securing timely fiscal notes, fiscal notes that we think are accurate, and it's made things a little bit difficult. I've talked to the committee, talked on the floor of the Senate, that when we had the budget forecast in November, which showed the deficit, and obviously the February forecast that showed a larger deficit, all the division chairs at the table it's not the purpose of the hearing today, but the division chairs can talk about the budget process we underwent, where I requested a proposal from them for cuts for the first deficit, and then in January, cuts for the projected second deficit. And Senator Berglund, I don't think we ever had – we had some fiscal – you had some fiscal notes for that process, but I know – Mr. Chairman, this is not meant to be criticism of Senator Berglund. She had difficulty meeting the deadline for that project simply because we couldn't get the fiscal notes for what she was attempting to do. So it's been an ongoing fight, particularly with Human Services, but I know it's had an impact occasionally with other divisions as well.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman. Careful. In preparing some fiscal notes, I think they're fairly easy to prepare. Like if you increase expenditures out of the Game and Fish Fund, it's one fund, it's pretty straightforward. But Senator Berglund, in your division with your bills, they're often quite complex. Wanting of that complexity and the interaction is the reason that some of the fiscal notes are delayed and their accuracy is a little more hard to determine. In other words, our expectations, are we expecting a fiscal note to be delivered too quickly to us because of the complexity?
Senator Berglund.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Frederickson, there was one item that we were asking for since January, and we got it at the end of March. So, I mean, yes, there is complexity involved in this area of the budget, but I would also just mention that the fiscal staff in the Department of Human Services, since I have been in the legislature, has grown about tenfold. I mean, I don't know what you do to get it done. I just don't know. I know that it makes it very hard for us to be able to do our job. And, you know, we can make excuses for it. We can, you know, try to rationalize it away, but it doesn't really solve the problems.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if the department needs more executive budget officers to sit in on the hearings and to work on these. Because certainly there's a relation between the expert staff we provide funding for in the department and the expertise that they can deliver to us in the legislature.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Senator Frederickson, as I said, since I have been in the legislature, the fiscal staff at the Department of Human Services has grown tenfold. My fiscal staff hasn't grown tenfold, I can tell you that.
Senator Dill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I've been relatively supportive of this idea of having inflation considered in the revenue forecast but I'm just wondering, how do we compare with other states? Do most states include inflation in their revenue forecast?
Sir Cohen?
Chairman Serendil, I believe that's the case. I think it's a mixture. I'm going to maybe defer to Mr. Mossman if he has a more accurate answer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, I don't have an itemized list, but I think it's quite safe to say that it is more common to include it than not. You know, in attending conferences, I'm not aware of states that do not include some sort of inflation estimate. And the Department of Finance is here, too. They may at some point have a different perspective. But I think it's fairly common to include a measure of inflation in out years, when looking at out years.
Sir Cohen. Or did you have further?
Senator Berglund.
Oh, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I know that the budget deficit that we're facing makes it difficult to even think about doing anything about inflation. But I still believe that we should be including it in the forecast for the very reason that not doing so leads people to believe that we either have more money than we really have or that we have less of a deficit than we might really have. I don't believe putting inflation in the forecast means that you have to fund inflation. In fact, you know, oftentimes we don't. Because we feel there's something else that is a higher priority. But not to know what it would be if we did, not to have the public understand what that amount of money would be, I think is a mistake.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, just...
Or Colin.
Well, I wanted to offer a comment in response to that, and happy to continue the... committee discussion. Again, my intent was to allow the authors of the legislation to present what they're doing and then certainly open up to committee debate in regard to everything. But again, obviously it's up to what...
Why don't we start processing the bills and we'll certainly have an opportunity to discuss the broader picture, I think, after we've seen them. It looks like all these bills have come from some other committee process, so I think what we should do is just go down, listen to the bills, I think lay them over, and then I believe you have a delete all that's going to try to pull everything together at the end. Is that what your plan is?
Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
And Senator Rest is here, so what I...
And so is Senator Clark, okay.
What I would like to do is to start with Senator Clark.
Okay.
And allow her to discuss her bill, and then Senator Rest, who's been at the heart of a lot of this, to discuss not only her bills, but also what her perspective is on the totality of this. I can then get into a discussion, of my particular bills and then offer the delete everything amendment.
Well, let's start looking at the bills then. Senator Clark, we have Senate File 3472, Minnesota Milestone Goals. Senator Clark. And the summaries are being passed out now, members.
What tells to do?
And you have one handout that apparently is in the packets, and something else is being handed out right now. Senator Clark.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's hard to believe that somebody could be excited about results-based budgeting, but I'm here because I think we're at an exciting point in time. And Senator Tomasoni, I believe you'll get excited about this by the end of this. We're here today to be looking at how we can be reinvigorating the Minnesota milestones. And I have Linda Cole and Tom Gillespie with me, both of whom were very involved in the original pieces, but also who in their current status can at least enlighten a little bit about where we might move forward. And I know we want to do this briefly. But the milestones, you may recall, started under Governor Carlson. It was the goal was to really talk to thousands of Minnesotans all over the state about what they'd like Minnesota to look like in 30 years. And we're now celebrating our sesquicentennial anniversary, so it's a really good time to be rethinking about this. Admin is still maintaining the website, but the last time a real update was done was in 2002. And we're not really being able to use this legislatively or from a planning tool standpoint with the administration. So you may recall last year we actually passed a bill off the floor in the Senate that had started some planning opportunities, working together with Senator Rest and other members in both the House and the Senate, working with the administration, but also working with Wilder and the U, talking about what some possibilities could be. So what we have in front of us now, and the other thing I should say is I don't know if you saw the most recent Governing magazine, but they've noted in there that Minnesota is not on the forefront, isn't really a leader in this area as we once were, and it really is Washington and Oregon who had done the benchmarks before us. So the bill, as it is in front of you, reinstates the milestones, but it proposes to do so with collaboration with the private and academic sectors. Compass, some of you may be familiar, is a tool that's happening in the metro area right now through Wilder with a partnership of foundations and corporations looking at how we're stacking up in a number of indicators, and they're looking at going statewide, and they're willing to be working with us to be linking information that can go back to the state. And to enhance using milestones both legislatively as well as in the administration, the bill, well, from a legislative standpoint, it establishes a subcommittee of the Joint Legislative Committee on Planning and Fiscal Policy on Government Accountability. And what the hope would be there is that we would have had experts that would have worked on how we make sure that we've got the right indicators, and then the group would actually adopt it. To increase the legislative use of the milestones in the near future, the Department of Finance is required and has agreed to link budget change items in the next biennial budget document to milestone indicators and goals, and then the subcommittee would review the format the department proposes to use to communicate the information. Additionally, the Sesquicentennial Commission has agreed to be sharing information that they're gathering right now so we can see how things link up. We have been working very closely with the administration, both with admin and with finance and with the governor's office, and this is one of those areas that we should be able to move forward together so that we have good information. And it partially goes back to what Senator Berglund was talking about a little bit ago. How do the proposals coming to us, how are they impacting these goals, and how are we passing laws that also impact the goals? So very quickly, because Mr. Gillespie's been working a bit on this, that we'd let him speak to that, Mr. Chair. And Minsky, where Ms. Cole now works, is able to be participating with us as well. But you may remember she was director of planning at the time the milestones went into place.
Mr. Gillespie, welcome to the Finance Committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Gillespie. I'm the Minnesota State Demographer in the Minnesota Department of Administration, and I did work on milestones from its initial inception and continued through the most recent update. The concept really started back in the late 1980s and early 1990s with the concern, growing concern, that while budgeting was almost entirely a relatively short-run concept of a biennium or two biennia, that a prudent approach to program development and budgeting would take a longer run view of the world, especially since there were forecasts for substantial changes in our society over the long run. So, beginning in 1991, we initiated the milestones program or project. The first aspect of that was to develop a vision for the future. Basically, where do we want to go before we start off on our journey? And that was done through statewide interviews, group interviews with literally thousands and thousands of people around the state. And as just a personal reflection of that, it was amazing how consistent those were from one area to the next, from one group to the next, from one political viewpoint to the next. The vision of what Minnesotans want for Minnesota for their grandchildren, which was the way we expressed it, was very consistent. Out of the visions, we developed goals and statewide indicators to indicate progress towards the goals. At approximately the same time, we also initiated studies to look at the budgeting process and potential structural issues in the budgeting process with the Within Our Means project and the Brandel Weber project that was an extension of the Within Our Means project. And the idea of that was to examine the fiscal issues that may arise in our movement towards that vision and those goals. The one aspect that was never really developed through the process was the direct link between the budgeting process and the visioning and goal development that I believe this bill attempts to resolve.
Any questions for Mr. Gillespie? Thank you, Ms. Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Linda Cole. I'm currently the Associate Vice Chancellor for Public Affairs at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. In 1991, I was the Director of the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning. And milestones was really made Minnesota one of the first states in the nation to try to link the state's goals with measurable outcomes. It was modeled after Oregon benchmarks, which is still going, as I understand. And we really went around the state in a series of meetings and tried to engage people in discussing what do you want for the future of the state? What would you like the state to look like in 30 years? Through that, it was actually quite remarkable. We talked to about 4,000 people altogether in developing the goals and the indicators. The goals were very, very broad, but also very visionary. Minnesota will be a community of people who respect and care for one another. Our economic activity will create wealth and provide a good standard of living for all our people. Our citizens will be good thinkers, creative, always learning with the skills to compete internationally. We will protect and enjoy the natural world. And our government will be responsive, effective, and close to the people. Those were the visionary statements that came out of that. Since then, we did do a series of annual reports on how we were doing on the outcomes and were we getting closer to the goals. And I think we were making progress. One of the theories behind Minnesota Milestones was that if you don't know where you're going, if you don't measure it, you're not going to get there. So I think this is I'm really thrilled that we're talking about reinstating them.
Members, I should point out, as you know, I chair the State Government Budget Division, and one of our recommendations that is in the fiscal bill that passed the Senate is to cut the funding for the Office of Strategic Planning, which is the very office that would be charged with implementing this. So that's an issue, and Commissioner Badgerow has reminded me of that a couple of times, that if we want to do this, we have to look at that funding issue. So,
Mr. Chair,
Sarah Clark.
I would certainly hope that we're able to resolve that issue going forward one way or the other, though, since the Office of Planning no longer exists. And bipartisanly, there is a group of legislators that have been talking about we do need to look longer range, and we do need some staff help to help us do that. While we have some great staff who have a lot of experience, they can't pull all these things out of a hat. And that is in part why we are working so hard to try to figure out how to be working both private and public sector and working with the U and the Center for Public Population Studies, among others. And if you think about what we could really do here, if we can get information down to a community level, and that's something our committees can be looking at, and we can see how the budget suggestions impact those things, that would be good for us. But also from a local community planning standpoint, that would be a very good thing, or a business planning standpoint. So we hope that at the moment you'll see that there is not a fiscal note attached to that, and we'll see kind of where things land up as we're moving forward. But I think that this is an important piece if we're really serious about figuring out where we're going and are we actually getting there. And when I look around the room and the different areas people are working on, we are doing some good things, but we don't know how effective it is. And, you know, for example, certainly Sarah Robling and myself, we've been working a lot on early childhood, and we're trying to figure out how we're measuring some of this. Well, there's a goal that relates to early childhood. And if we did a better job tracking some of that, we'd have some better ideas about what was or wasn't happening. So hopefully this stays a part of, not only a part of this, we've got some commitments on the part of the administration to be working with us. And I think that this is one of those areas that we can move together in the long run that will really take maybe some of the polarization that can happen around here out of the process and help us to actually try to move forward on good goals and good work.
Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 3472? Okay. Discussion. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Clark, could you kind of remind us what about the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy? What is that and who's on it?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, it is a commission that's been used over time and that we've kind of been reinvigorating of late that really looks at longer-term trends, both from a policy and fiscal standpoint. It would certainly be our hope that broadly we're looking at ways together, bipartisanly, to be going away from this roller coaster we've been on fiscally and try to flatten it out. I believe that the proposals that are in front of this committee today will help with that, but there are other things that we can be doing. And at this point, we have We've got several people in this room that are participating in that. I know that Senators Berglund and Frederickson are both on it. I'm trying to remember who else. I don't know who else is on here. Senator Betzold is on there. Senator Cohen, Senator Bach, Senator Pogemiller. The Speaker has gone on there recently. Majority Leader Serge and myself are serving ex officio. So it's a combination of folks. We're hoping that Senator Senjum comes on. We're trying to kind of figure out what's the right combination of people is on there for right now. But what the hope is really looking longer term, not about our short term issues, but the longer term where we're going.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Clark, you know, the real difficulty that I see, I believe that legislators, most legislators anyway, do hear from the public in their areas about what their priorities are and bring those priorities to the legislature. What I think happens, however, is that there is difficulty when there are more priorities than there is funding available. And I think there also are difficulties sometimes when those priorities are not necessarily shared by the administration. And I don't exactly understand how this process is going to resolve those things.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
And Senator Berglund, I think that this gives us some additional tools. And I think the fact, you know, the hope, and Ms. Cole may be able to speak more to this, because the thought was is this should be able to outlive any administration, because the original milestones were broader than just state government. It was about local governments. It was about communities, businesses, congregations, individuals. So looking more broadly at how we're doing, and it is a resource that we're able to link better, but it gives more of a check and balance. But, for example, in one of the goals happens to be Minnesotans will be healthy. Well, one of the things then that can be looked at is how are proposals that are coming forward from the administration and or from a group of people or interests, how does it impact that goal? And we have some indicators that go with that. Because more broadly, the foundation community and others, the business community and others, have become concerned about all this, it gives us an ability to have a wider group of people that are really seeing what the situations are. As Commissioner Marks has said, there may be policy differences or philosophical difference, but the facts are the facts. And so if we can bring forward and have information about that, have that be a lens at which proposals are at least going through, it may help us at least sort through some of those things. And this is supposed to not be just about any administration. And when I look at and I've talked to many people sitting around this room about some of the goals that are here, you know, we've got a goal that has is about our students and our workforce being able to be competitive in a global marketplace. And Senator Pappas's committee is working hard on that, as well as, I believe, Senator Tomasoni's and Senator Stump's committee. Well, what is it that we are doing that helps us lead to that direction, and what is that filter? So we often deal with 30,000-foot kinds of issues, and that would perhaps be the broad frame that a committee would look at. But whether it is an agency or it is somebody coming together with a particular proposal, I think it can help us. Another example would be in Oregon recently. They were well below the national average on child hunger. I mean, there were some issues that were around around food and nutrition. And what happened was a group of advocates, because their chair said, look, this is something that isn't a good thing, they came forward together with people in their communities to come up with a proposal that would change that. They implemented those changes, and they have increased, you know, they've improved significantly in that area. So I think that it can help us. I understand and certainly have at times shared your understandable skepticism. I can remember when these, I see this in between two friends, I can remember at least internally rolling my eyes when these originally came out, because, like, great, we've got some great words on a piece of paper, but is anybody going to have a desire to do anything? One of the challenges that happened is strategies often were not linked the goals on purpose. Although if you look at it originally, some of the things that came out from departments really did make a difference. The original MFIP came up, that not the very beginnings, but truly that that piece helped the department stay true. Minnesota Care helped these particular goals. I know in talking with Ms. Cole and others, it helped the administration at least focus a bit more too. So again, we may be in tandem at times administratively and legislatively. We may not be, but these are broader visions that have been there for our state and can really help us return more to a cutting-edge way of doing things. You know, do I think that this in and of itself is a panacea? Of course not, but it can help us get back in the right direction.
Sarah Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Coles, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
I'm thinking back to when the milestones were first initiated, and some of them were well received, and some of them were not. In fact, I can recall with a couple of the senior members of the Senate committee chairs referring to them as millstones, not milestones. So, I'm curious, has there been an effort to go back and look at those goals and those reports and match how many of them actually made a difference and how many of those goals resulted in outcomes similar to the goals?
It's goals. Oh, I'm sorry.
And where some of the, it appears that some of the goals are met, did the milestones actually help achieve those goals? Did they help drive the policy, or was it more by coincidence than direction?
Ms. Coles.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fredrickson, we did spend a considerable amount of time looking at the goals, trying to come up with objective measurements that would really measure whether or not the goal was being achieved. And there were some changes over time as we improved the way we could collect data or improved the way we could measure whether we were achieving the goal. And I think the annual reports really did help to kind of keep the administration on track as far as, you know, are we making progress, are we slipping behind, and if we're slipping behind, what can we do to achieve those? Senator Clark is right. The milestones were a set of goals and a set of measurements. They were not a set of strategies. The strategies could differ depending on the times, depending on the ideas people had. But the whole point of milestones was, okay, will this get us closer to the goal that we're trying to achieve? And I think I don't recall a lot of controversy over the goals and the measurements. There might have been some controversy over the strategies that were selected to try to achieve them.
Sir Pariseau, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if somebody can tell us the first paragraph in sub 10 there on the front page. It lists a statutory reference under which the Subcommittee on Government Accountability must be assembled. What is that about? What is that statute about?
Sir Pariseau, are you referring to page 1, line 13?
That's right.
13. Line 13. I think that's a commission that Senator Clark referenced. Mr. Watson, were you able to describe that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, that's the statute under which the LCC has authority to set up bicameral entities. They create the entity, and the appointments then are made by the Subcommittee on Committees in the Senate and the Speaker of the House.
Sir Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you did the survey and interviewed those many people that you interviewed, did you asked about goals, but what do you think the people were really saying? Were they are goals equal to how they are living now or the I mean, what actually was the definition of a goal in their minds, do you think?
Ms. Coles.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, we really went to places in Minnesota where people were congregated with a blank sheet of paper. We said, what would you like the state to look like in the next 20, 30 years? And we engaged people in conversations. We broke them into small groups of maybe 10 to 12 people. We had trained facilitators to stimulate the conversation, and we had note takers to record what they said. And as Mr. Gillespie said, we found very similar goals around the state, whether we were in Moorhead or Winona, people had very similar things that they wanted to see for their children and their grandchildren. We didn't really define, you know, what a goal is. We let them talk about what they wanted the state to look like, and we tried to distill from that some statements that summarized what their wishes were.
Mr. Chairman, just follow up on that. It seems like a wise thing to do would be to try to identify Minnesota's strengths, the things that we're good at, and then try to build on those. And because, each region or each state, I think, has certainly some definite trademarks or fingerprints that we as a society or as a state have left. And I think by building on your strengths, you actually can move forward a lot better, I think, than to try to go outside of that and start all over. And one of the things that it seems like Minnesota has done well in is just yesterday I was reading in a journal where the difference between the income gap between the wealthy and the lowest is like in the top five in terms of the narrowest gap between the those categories of people, which really promotes us as a state of having a lot of people in the middle, which is good. I mean, we know that differential between the haves and the have-nots is growing, but yet we've been able to, you know, stay in that very top, I think it was like either third or fourth state. They did it a little bit differently. They said we were 48th, so I think we were probably like number two or three. So I think promotes a good, healthy society in that people, you know, are earning income and making progress. So I don't know if that's attributable to like our work ethic or education level or both or maybe a whole host of things. But I think by building on our strengths, we can continue to move forward in a very successful way.
Mr. Gillespie?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, I use a metaphor in my own mind of a journey of going to a city, and there's really three questions. One is where do we want to go? And that's sort of the vision. That's the milestones thing, is what city do we want to go to? The second is what road is the best way to get there? And that becomes very much of a strategy. A third question really is, well, what vehicle do we take? Do we ride the bus, or do we drive our own car, or fly, or how do we get there? And that's sort of the question you're asking, and that is something that I know I and my colleague Mr. Stinson and others have spent a lot of time thinking about and concerned with, but I think we have some at least basic concepts of why Minnesota is such a remarkable and prosperous place, but at the same time we also need to be concerned about those goals and vision as to where we want to go. I know Senator Berglund raise the question, about, well, if you ask people what do they want, you get a fairly predictable list of answers, many of which are contradictory. But it's remarkable, and I wasn't a believer at first when we started this process, but it's quite remarkable when we changed the question and said, well, not what you want, but what do you want Minnesota to look like for your grandchildren? What do you want? What kind of world do you want for your grandchildren? The questions then become much more focused in a very different direction, and are much less about the short run. What do I want today or this year? And more about which are really in many ways more process oriented, and more about where do we actually want to end up? Where do we want in the long run? And that's part. And I think all those elements are really necessary for a prudent operation of state government.
Senator Clark.
The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, there's lots of possibilities about communities and how the information can be used. And one of the things that we have been kicking around a little bit with some of the foundation folks and Ms. Cole and I have talked about, because the technical colleges might be able to have a place in this, is having communities relook at where they're at and saying, what are two or three things we're doing really well that we want to build on, or what's the one thing we want to work on, and maybe what's a deficit that we have, because part of this is about safety and other things. Maybe there's something they want to improve on. But then for us, from a legislative standpoint, there may be information that is common around the state that we can better utilize. And one of the things that I should have said is, and you may be interested in the subcommittee, is the subcommittee would not necessarily be made up of members who are currently on the broader commission, but people who are really interested in kind of sifting through this. So I think that there's a way, without this being bureaucratic or anything else, that we can be getting better information and really be able to help think about what is that legacy. We've thought a lot about legacies around here. What is the legacy that we're living in? Where is it we want to go?
Sir Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm interested in when I look at what you're talking about is answer to somebody out there that's in that level of poverty, if you will, that all they've got time for is surviving. And all of these plans and stuff I've looked at through the years, they all tend to be the same way, that it's aimed at and targeted people that are already doing pretty well financially, and the poor end up with poor health care, poor whatever, housing, and so forth. And I just think that needs addressing. I also, you're talking about fiscal notes earlier, and what I am interested in there is how to make that where there's more neutrality in that thing. And I don't think that the fiscal notes, as they are currently put forth to us, they're not necessarily partisan, but they receive things from individuals they've got it may not be where I really ran into trouble was with dealing with legislation and on the environment and on the law enforcement and courts and all of those kinds of things.
Sir Foley,
isn't the Republicans.
Senator Rest has a bill that we're going to be hearing shortly on fiscal note requests and appeals process. So I think those points should be addressed
Mr.
to her.
Chair, very quickly,
not on fiscal notes, Senator
not
Clark.
Not on fiscal notes, but just I think that what we have worked out with the administration in the next time around and the budget change line items will be helpful to your point, because a few of the broader goals, there are four areas and 19 goals. And under people, I'm just going to very quickly list a couple of them. One is our children will not live in poverty. Families will provide a stable, supportive environment for their children. People in need will receive support that helps them live as independently as they can. And the measures that were used, and this is something that needs to be relooked at, is under that last one is nearby support, in-home help for older people, welfare to work, food shelf use, homelessness. There are some indicators that we can use that can help us, but in your question, when a proposal comes back, it would relate to one of these goals and say how it impacts those goals. And I think that might help you in that area. But as Mr. Chair Senator Betzold said, I think that one of Senator Rest's components of this was going to help get back to your other part of your question.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 3472? The plan, again, members, is that we're going to hear these bills, lay them over. There's going to be a delete all later on, which has all these bills in there. So if you have some issues or amendments or whatever, they'd be more appropriate for the delete all. But obviously, hold the thought, make your notes, and so forth, as if you have any issues. So if there's no further discussion on Senate File 3472, we will lay that aside and move on to the next bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Clark. The next one is, Senator Rest, you have two bills, or three bills up. Which one did you wish to start with? Senator Rest.
Morning, Mr.
You want to start with Senate File 2886, state budget requirements?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 2886, Senate Rust.
First of all, I'd like to give a little bit of a background of why these bills are coming forward, and then I'll explain each of them in turn. The late last summer, I and a couple of other DFL senators and some DFL House members started talking about the kind of reputation that, quite frankly, that Democrats have as being identified only by the phrase tax and spend. And I see at least the Democrats here are smiling at that. And that that we really should be about more than that. And that one of the things that we should start focusing on would be to offer suggestions as part of an agenda to increase efficiency in government and accountability. So we spent a lot of time to start with talking about what kind, not just ideas about what to do, but what should be the framework and the foundation for that discussion, and to be able to have it long term, not just to come up with something in a given session. We talked with a number of folks and developed some principles that we were going to use to measure or to assess and evaluate any kinds of ideas that came before us. After we developed those principles, then we had a smorgasbord of ideas for bills, and we were determined that they wouldn't just be talk, but it would be language that we put in bills. And we measured those bills and those ideas by these principles, and we tried to put them in plain talk so that it would not not read like something out of an economics textbook, but that would be something that would be some goals and principles that we could articulate to one another and also to our constituents. And I think that you'll recognize them as maybe obvious, maybe common sense, but we thought that they needed to be stated as we then took up some of these proposals. And we did come up with five. First of all, that Minnesota government should deliver straight talk and open books, that there is not enough transparency, particularly in our budget process, that there is not enough, quite frankly, legislative involvement from the very beginning. It was a New York legislator who said that the legislature, as with the administration and the state agencies, should be in a constant budgeting process, and that we should be year-round involved in understanding the impacts of our budget decisions and dealing with the information about them. Secondly, that we should use honest accounting and realistic budgeting. Now, we can disagree on what we mean by those adjectives, honest and realistic. Our proposals reflect at least the conclusions that we reached, and you've already had a beginning discussion about the role that inflation should play, for example, in the forecast. Thirdly, our third principle was that we should cut bureaucracy and reward innovation. So often when there is innovation in a state agency, the government and the budgeting process sees fit to not reward those folks, but to take the dollars away from them when they are, and there is a disincentive It maybe shouldn't be there, but there is a disincentive for people to work for more innovation because they feel like then that the resources are denied them to do further work in that area, and instead of being rewarded for innovation, they're being punished. Fourthly, that Minnesota government should be required to deliver results. And number five, that we should set clear priorities and plan for the long run. And I think the discussion that we've just had on, or that you've just had on the Minnesota milestones speaks to that. So we did introduce a number of bills. We had probably 50 ideas for them, and we asked our caucus members to react to them as ones that they thought we should bring forward as part of an agenda, and then we introduced them with individual authors, and I have three of those proposals before you today. And I can tell you that the ideas ranged from things like with a commitment for the legislature to be more involved in the budgeting process, either on a year-round basis and or starting with the forecast that we receive, that there were some that wanted to propose a legislative budget office. There are states around the country, and of course the federal government not only has the General Accounting Office, and it also has a Congressional Budget Office, so that the Congress has a budget and the administration has a budget, and they develop them, if not independently, they certainly use them to justify the positions that they take with regard to fiscal policy issues. In other states, that indeed is the case. The legislature develops its own budget. It is not necessarily a reactive group, or it is not a they do not have the position where the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. We decided that that was not a very good model for Minnesota, and some of us, I'm one of them, don't think that states that have a legislative budget office necessarily produce better, more thoughtful budgets than the state of Minnesota does. However, there are ways in which it would be appropriate and proper and beneficial to the budgeting process for the legislature to become more involved, and if not always an equal partner, certainly certainly more of a partner than some of us currently believe we are, and that the current situation has some deficiencies in it. So we have these proposals before us, and the first one then that I would like to speak to is Senate File 2886, which does deal with getting information about the budgeting process to the legislature in a more open, transparent way, and also earlier. Under current law, the executive branch's legislative and budget proposals are not public until the budget itself is presented to the legislature. And then after the budget is presented, as you all know, supporting data, including the agency requests, become public. But the preliminary drafts do not become public. And we think that the legislature, once again, should be involved at an earlier time in having the information. Knowledge is not our enemy, and to be much more involved in the planning and understanding of what the administration and the state agencies are going to be proposing. So the proposal changes the current law in two ways. number one, the not public status of the executive branch's legislative and budget proposals before the budget is presented to the legislature would not apply to requests from the legislature, so that the legislature is getting information again at an earlier time, and quite frankly, then would be taking on more work in order to do that in a more responsible way. And then after the budget is presented to the legislature, all supporting data, including preliminary drafts, would be public. Secondly, it requires that this proposal requires that estimated expenditures submitted as part of the governor's budget documents would be submitted in writing with information that supports the estimated expenditures, and that the estimated expenditures be subclassified by individual agency departments. So the budget chairs would be getting far more detailed information about how the budget was being built. Thirdly, with regard to budget estimates, the current law would be struck governing budget materials that agencies must file with the Commissioner of Finance in the fall of the even-numbered years, and provides that the agencies must file that not only with the Commissioner of Finance, but with the Finance Committees of the Legislature. And in this way, that the estimates, including a full explanation, not just a number, and not just a paragraph, but a full explanation of requests for increased appropriations, expansions of services, and the additions of new activities, that there would be a statement of work accomplished during the preceding biennium, so we can compare what has gone on before and work proposed to be done during the next biennium. A list simply of all agency employees' titles and salaries, and a comprehensive and integrated statement of agency missions and outcomes or performance measures. And then it would strike again from current new language that the Commissioner of Finance is not required to send the legislature information that identifies executive branch decision items. And then fourthly, detailed budget estimates that are included in the governor's budget requests to the legislature must include the request of each department in an agency in a presentable, easily understood, if you will, form, so that the agency requests and the governor's proposal and the way in which the legislature is going to deal with that is accessible to us all, and we can begin to understand from on an ongoing basis, and certainly at that beginning time in the fall of the even-numbered years, the process that the administration is going through to arrive at their budget, rather than getting the budget later on in the odd number year and saying, where in the world did this come from and how did you dream this up? Or this is an exciting idea. How did that come about, and why are we seeing that now? So it increases the transparency of the process and also brings the legislature into the process earlier, with more information, and quite frankly, with more accountability than not only for the governor's office and the state agencies, but more accountability for making budget decisions for the legislature itself. So those are the initiatives with regard to the budget making process that are in Senate File 2886. And although I did not work directly worked with Representative Hortman on this, we did not work directly with the governor's office or finance like Senator Clark did with the milestones, There was certainly lots of conversation going on at the staff level with the Department of Finance, and they were well aware of the direction that we were going with regard to this goal of transparency and knowledge and responsibility. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's the gist of Senate File 2886.
Thank you, Senator Rest. I've got a couple of questions, and then I'm anticipating there's going to be other questions from the committee as well, too. I do recall, I think it was in 1994 or so, when we changed the law to
the data,
yeah. the preliminary drafts, and one of the arguments at that time was that a governor should be able to get as many ideas on the table, whether they're bad ideas or unpopular ideas or whatever, and then pick and choose. And then so that's why they did not want to have the preliminary drafts to become public, you know, early on. Now, by even having them released after the budgeting process is done with, does that still possibly chill the advice that the governor is going to be given if it comes out later on that somebody had proposed something that was really unpopular and the governor said, well, but I'm not going to do that, but it still comes out that was an idea floating around anyway. Is that going to be an argument that is going to suppress the process?
A couple of responses to that, Mr. Chairman, and that first of all, that this proposal calls for that preliminary information to be released to the legislature, mm-hmm. And not it is not public. Now, I suppose if a legislator wants to talk about it, I don't know that you can forbid them from doing so. But it would seem to me that by having access to that information, that there is a trust level that would be built up, and it's also a goal of not trying to have the legislature and the administration, whether they're the same party or different parties, be seen as enemies in this and hostile to one another and to good goals in building the in building the budget and the. We did indeed make that information non-public, and I believe it was 1995 in that budget year. But others have noted that what that's led to was the lack of legislative engagement. And what we're trying to do is turn that around a bit, not overturn it perhaps, but turn it around a bit and have that discussion, and this would be one way of approaching that. And maybe there are other ways, and maybe there are better ways. But these are some ideas that we came up with in working with staff and so forth.
Well, somehow, if it gets in the hands of some legislators, I just don't see that it's going to stay non-public very long. But Sarah Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I just don't agree with you on that. I occasionally, in recent years, I've had department staff give me something and say, no, I didn't give this to you. But, there might be a way out of this problem we're having. And you can look at it and decide what you think, but if you choose to bring it forward, it's your idea. You didn't get it from me. Mm-hmm. Well, it shouldn't have to be that way. I mean, I think we work best when we do have all the ideas in front of us. And, nobody had to tell me that it would be my idea if I brought it forward. I mean, obviously it's not the administration's idea. It wasn't in their proposal. But the idea that we can work together to try to find the best ideas to get where we both want to go, I think, is a meritorious thing. I'll give you an example, and I hope I'm not going to use an example that's going to get anybody in too much trouble here, but last session and the session before that, when we worked on improving our programs for outpatient mental health, the governor funded the entire thing out of the Health Care Access Fund. Well, that really wasn't acceptable to the legislature. But we shared the goal of getting that program up and running. And so I worked very hard to find some other ways to make sure we could fund that appropriately. And in the end, we more or less did succeed. You know, to the extent we didn't succeed, it was because our budget target kept getting brought down by the governor. But we more or less succeeded, and it was because we shared the same goal. We just needed to find a more appropriate way to get to that goal.
Ms. Erbling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I don't disagree with you, Senator Ress, but a governor could set his priorities quite early and give his agency's direction so that even their preliminary budgets are in line with his or her priorities. And so we wouldn't necessarily get anything new. I mean, or something that isn't going to be visible. And I guess one of the things that I don't want to just count on the agency staff to bring forward ideas, and certainly we don't. I mean, we almost have 5,000 bills this biennium ourselves. And so, you know, we as legislators do bring forward a lot of our own ideas, and we're not stifled from doing that, really, in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if agency staff feels that they are. You know, I've heard some things on occasion where, well, we're not supposed to ask for that this year. When I might want it, but I can ask for it, and so they might not be able to come and support my position, but that doesn't mean that we can't do it, because we sometimes have the support within our bodies to be able to manage that. But I still am not sure we're going to really get what you're after, because there could be prior direction from the governor's staff, and we still won't. The preliminary budget still may not indicate what some people really thought in the agencies.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, you know, still the goal is simply stated: more information and earlier could lead to better budget discussions. In my mind, by the legislature and the governor and his state agencies. And it's nothing more complicated than that, but we don't get a lot of information early, and particularly compared with other states, our legislature is, at least from, you know, a cursory look, like through NCSL, we are much less involved in that, and we're just trying to look at ways to become more involved with that, because that makes us more accountable, and maybe we don't want to be, but it would make us more accountable for the decisions that we make, and not just say, well, we're just going to reject this and that and the other thing. And I think if we're involved earlier with more transparency and with more information, that puts an additional public policy burden on the legislature, and I believe that's a good thing.
Sir Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I do have a couple of statements, a couple of responses to this.
Sure.
Number one, the first is on the first page, and it's very similar to what Senator Betzel referenced. The except for request from the legislature, this information is non-public data. I guess I have a question whether or not you would continue it to be non-public data after it's after it is presented to the legislature.
No, currently it is. It becomes public data at that point.
If this were to become law, I would very strongly suggest that it would continue to be non-public data, even after it's released to the legislature, if it's released early. If you don't, it's akin to releasing it to the public.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, it is public after it's released to the legislature. In current law, you would want to change current law and keep it?
Mr. Chairman,
make it non-public?
Current law, legislative and budget proposals, including preliminary drafts, are created and collected or maintained by the administration are protected non-public data. And you're making an exception to that, except for requests by the legislature.
Right.
So my question is, do you want, if somebody in the legislature, if a committee chair in the legislature requests information before it's released, does that continue to be non-public data?
No. Except for requests to the legislature. So even though Senator Betzel talked about a legislator could release the data, the legislator would be held to and be accountable for the law saying it's non-public data except for their eyes. And they would be breaking the law if they released it prior to the budget being presented under this new proposal.
Senator Rest, I think you would need to explicitly say that in this section then, because I think there's some ambiguity there when you say except for requests from the legislature.
I accept that suggestion.
And the Data Practices Act does not apply to the legislature, so I'm not quite sure what the penalty would be here. It also would mean the second change, of course, as I alluded to earlier, would be the preliminary drafts would now be, as I read this, would now be part of the public data at the end of the
at the end,
at
of, the
end
of the process. That's correct, Mr. Right. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Fredericks. Sure.
If we would not make those changes, it would be akin to releasing all of the documents requested by the legislature to the public, and they would all become public information.
That's not what is intended here.
And I think there needs to be a full and free flow of information between the agencies, the Commissioner of Finance, and the Governor's office. The chief executive needs to have that free flow of information. Otherwise, they will stop putting information that may be sensitive or may be options into hard copy form. It'll all be face-to-face meetings to keep sensitive information from being made public before the governor makes a decision on those issues. And on the second page, developing the budget starts probably in May when the governor and the finance commissioner direct the various agencies to how to prepare their budget, what to include for inflation, if any, what options they want considered. And then there's a time schedule of October 15th before that information comes back to the commissioner, and then in current law, November 30th, there's another timeline.
We're moving that up a bit and including the information be provided to the legislature.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, again, this I don't know how you reserve the right of the governor to make changes in direction, to develop policy, to develop the governor's vision for the state, if that information is also simultaneously delivered to the legislature. I understand you would like the legislature to get background information earlier, but I don't know how you do that and preserve for the governor the right to lead the state, to have a vision for the state, and to release his vision at one time when he presents the budget to the state of Minnesota if it has been leaked out through the legislature before the governor can make those vision and make those proposals.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, some of this is just plain information that it seems to me that the legislature, in order to assess what the governor is going to be presenting to them, would be of value, including a list of employees and how much money they make. When we do very little examination of the base budget. Everything is always on the margin, and we never have enough time, it seems to me, to go back and say, well, just how many employees do you have? Not how many more you want, but how many do you have? What are their titles? What are their functions? And what kind of money do they make? And that is public information. So it's getting it in a form and early enough to be able to then, it seems to me, to be able to understand what is, when a proposal comes forward, to take into account how to go about assessing whether it's a good proposal. And then secondly, a statement of work accomplished during the preceding biennium also looks at what did the base budget do and what accomplishments were effected during that biennium, so that when we get a proposal, we would be able to look at the statements made by the state agency themselves about what they had accomplished and whether the proposal regarding their future work is worth it. And we don't have enough time to do that now. And what we're trying to do in this proposal is find ways for the legislature to become involved at an earlier point and as more of a partner, rather than thinking that the budget process is always one filled with hostility between the legislature and the executive branch. And maybe that's just Pollyanna. Maybe it is just something that we can't do. However, if we don't become more involved, it seems to me, in an ever more increasing complex fiscal environment, the legislature is going to be less and less and less and less involved. And that is not the case in terms of what's happening in other states. And it seems to me that we should take some initiative in being more involved, and that's the goal here.
Well, let me clarify something. I mean, we do have current law under which the agency files with the commissioner certain information, and that's public information that which we can get. So, Mr. Mossman, what currently do we get under current law, and you know, regardless of how this is going to change, what's the process now?
Mr. Chair and members, under this section of law, and of recent, a lot of times this information is available both in paper form but always posted on the web. So all of the mission statements, for example, the description of the agency's the base budgets and the allocation of funding by agency is all made available according to this time frame as information, as Senator Rest has referred to also, separate from the information that is being put together by agencies to develop the agency's budget. So as far as kind of the background information about what the budget is right now and what the agency's mission statement is and budget estimates for the future, that information is made available under current law according to this section as it's listed here for both the current biennium and the upcoming biennium.
Okay, Senator Fredrickson.
Ms. Chairman, that basic information is available now, and I think much of the information that Senator Rest would like to have us receive should be in the budget documents. And I certainly share the frustration more recently that that information is not in our budget documents, and it very well should be. It seemed to me years ago we used to receive more information than we do now. But going back,
and certainly since before 1995 we did.
Right. But going back to the basic of the governor presenting the budget, you know, we have an executive and legislative branch of government, and they're designed to be checks and balances. And I think the executive should be able to develop the budget and have some freedom to have a free flow of discussion and information before making decisions, and not have information that may be detrimental to what the governor wants to do leaked before the governor makes the budget. We're not a parliamentary system where the prime minister is coming from the majority mm-hmm. party in the legislature, you know, where you probably could meld those two together. We have an executive and a legislative, and certainly we should work together, but there needs to be some independence also.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, it seems to me that if the legislature wants to assert a role in the budget-making process, then those of us who are frustrated by the lack of information and that we're getting less and less information and we don't understand how an agency is talking about its accomplishments, and we're feeling stymied in making good decisions, that then we should assert ourselves and establish a legislative budget office, and we'll develop our budget, and the governor can develop his budget. We can each do it in secret, and then we can release them, and we can see who prevails. And it seems like to me that is not a good model for Minnesota, but it is one that is brought forward every couple of years or so, precisely because we're not getting good enough information early enough. And maybe there are other proposals to get at that other than the ones that are in this bill, but I think it is a real problem. It is one that again has been discussed at the staff level with our staff and also our fiscal staff and with the Department of Finance. And it does seem to me that they're not opposed to having the legislature involved in an earlier level. Maybe not precisely this way. But I think reasonable people would say that involvement of the legislature earlier would lead to better decision making. I think that's a good goal.
Senator Berlin?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, you know, the way I look at it is I work for the people of the state of Minnesota. That's who, you know, pays me. And our state agencies work for the people of the state of Minnesota. And the governor and the staff he has in his office work for the people of the state of Minnesota. And what I have seen happen, especially in more recent years, is the attitude that the state agencies work for the governor rather than work for the people of the state of Minnesota. And if they work for the governor, then they can't also work with us. And I think that's wrong. I just think that's wrong. I think we all work for the people, and certainly the state agencies work for the people and need to work with the legislature and not feel like they are owned by and work for the governor and the governor only.
Senator Fredrickson.
Senator Bergen, I certainly do not disagree with you.
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, do you think I could maybe go on to my
We're not going to finish this agenda by 11, so I anticipate we'll probably have to recess and come back after the floor session. But I have one or two other questions, too. Just as a practical matter, in Section 3, we're supposed to be providing the information to the finance committees of the legislature. I'm assuming that would be the umbrella
for instance, the Senate, the Finance Committee, as opposed to the subordinate budget divisions? Or it's not clear to me who would get the information. But on a broader schedule scale, an issue that you and I have talked about repeatedly is the fact that if this is going to be submitted in October, well, every even-numbered year, the House of Representatives is up for election, and you won't know until after the election not only who's going to be in the next legislature, but it's going to take a while before you figure out, you know, who's going to be on what committees and who's going to be responsible for the budget areas. And in some of the years, the Senate is up, and some of the years the governor is going to be up, too. So I just wonder, you know, as a practical matter, providing the information in an October of an even-numbered year, how much value that's going to be. Obviously, if you've got an outgoing finance chair, that, you know, as somebody who might be leaving, that may be important to that person, but it may not of less use to the new person who's coming into that position.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would go back to my statement at the beginning that we need to get beyond the election cycle, and particularly with regard to budgeting. It should be institutional rather than who's chair of what committee. And although you and I, and I appreciate the eagle eye you have on particularly on reports that are given, but a governor, even if he loses an election in November, has already been working. I think I don't know if it was Senator Roebling or Senator Olson said since May, preparing a and having the state agencies, who, as Senator Berglund, Senator Frederickson say, work for the people and not for the governor, that they are working on building their budgets and their agency requests for whoever would be governor. And it seems to me that we need to be looking at the budgeting as a year-round involvement, not only of the governor, not only of the state agencies, but also of the legislature, and that it be done on an institutional basis. And there have to be people that you deliver information to, and you can't just, you know, throw it on the floor in the middle of a room. And so I just think we need, in this particular instance, to get beyond that, although I accept your point that if a governor loses an election, that the new governor coming in will be offering his or her own budget. But I can tell you they're not starting from square one. They're starting from work that had been going on for the last 7 or 8 months, and the legislature should also not start from square one in terms of its involvement in the process.
Well, Senator Rest, I think that is true. I mean, Governor Ventura, for example, knew in 2002 that he was not seeking reelection, but he did meet his responsibility to prepare a budget for the next governor. Now, the next governor, of course, had to prepare his own budget, but at least he had something to work off of coming in. Senator Frederickson.
One other comment, that when Governor Carlson left office, he too
right.
left the budget process
right.
that was
right.
moving along as
right.
it was
and knowing
to
that he was not running for reelection, yes. Anything further on this particular bill?
Somebody back there.
Okay. Somebody else wants to testify on Senate File 2886. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Showalter. I'm a state budget director and assistant mm-hmm. commissioner at the Department of Finance. I just appreciate the discussion here and the focus on the budget process and agree that in terms of the budget, it is a statement of priorities for the people of Minnesota, and that the more information we can get out and the more choices that we can provide and an understanding of those choices, the better the decisions are ultimately going to be, and hopefully ultimately the better the outcomes will be. With that being said, I just wanted to make sure that the record states we were aware of this bill. We understood where this bill was, but the department does not support the changes included in this bill.
We know that.
And I just wanted to be sure that was on the record. And I don't think that's an administration issue as much as any of the administrations, the executive and legislative branch. This would have been the same position the Department of Finance would have taken 4 years ago, 8 years ago, or 12 years ago, that there is some space that's necessary for internal discussions. as legislators, quite well understand. There's some space that's necessary to allow new information, new ideas to come up so that we don't just do orthodox and take everything from the top down. And if we don't have that space and don't have that ability to have that discussion prior to the release of the budget, I think we will provide ultimately less information.
Mr. Chairman, I did not mean to imply that by that the Department of Finance or any other agency or the governor supported this, but merely that these proposals were not developed in a vacuum. They were not developed without talking to people who are intimately involved in the state agencies with fiscal policy. That's all.
And I want to clarify, Mr. Showalter, you indicated that you did not, your agency did not support the bill, but is it the bill in total? Because, you know, there are parts of the bill, for instance, that require additional information be provided. So I'm just not sure whether you're just saying the whole bill is being opposed or whether there are parts of it that you would agree upon.
Mr. Chair, members, we have concerns with most all of the provisions in this particular bill.
Okay. Well,
the provision of the executive legislative information is probably the gravest of the concerns. We try to already provide a lot of information prior to the release of the budget, and we've designed our budget process very explicitly in the last 5 years or so, so that we get more of the budget information out there, so it's not just a big surprise. Here's the entire 5,000-page budget document, that you've got the information and descriptions of the programs, that you've got the base budget information, and really the incremental pieces, what's the governor saying about it? So in terms of trying to understand and help find ways to provide information to the legislature on the status of state programs, what's going on in the state's finances, we're always open to trying figuring that out. And that's also just the last piece is the budget process has been an incremental one where we try to say, how did we do last time? How can we make it a little bit better this next time? And if there's ideas, we are certainly.
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chairman, as I was reflecting on this, I think that it seems most like it's an effort to get a full-time legislature. that in terms of the information that is required or even available, I'm a little uncomfortable, I think, as you've stated here, with trying to intertwine the legislature with the governor's budget-making process. But as I reflect, maybe it's different in different agencies, but within education, which is the one I'm most familiar with, it's hard for me to think of any bit of information about what's going on with the department or the various programs and the financial impacts and that isn't available, and that the staff isn't available to us to respond to requests for that information. Whether it's and much of it is on their website, or else they have to have it in reports. The multitude of reports we expect on one program or another at a certain date each year. But it seems like we've been moving technologically to more transparency and openness in what's expected to be on websites, that people that want to go in. I have constituents that I wonder if they have a life, but they because they will spend time, and it's amazing what they can unearth and find and analyze and call and ask for interpretation of. And I don't know if that's true in every single department, but it seems to me that what we ought to be working toward is that general overall transparency and availability of information presented in a way that's understandable, then that's usable by us whenever we want to get started on it, and yet has retained some of that independence that I believe Senator Fredrickson was talking about, that the governor needs to be able to fashion his proposals, and we should not necessarily be attempting to interfere with that. But it doesn't stop the legislature from thinking through where some of those priorities might be as well. And is there a way of doing that without disrupting that separation of powers and that kind of budgeting process? That's kind of my reaction in a general way without getting at the specifics.
Sir Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was quite dismayed when you said you thought that the budget pages were now more readable and more information and better than they are, because I find them incomprehensible. And so as you're working toward the next year's set of documents, could you maybe talk to some of us at this end who have to work with these documents? Because there's just basic information that's just plain missing out of them. And, you know, I'm a new budget chair, and so maybe it's just that I'm stupid, but it's really hard to dig out any information. And I'm sorry, but, you know, if you think that they're well done, I just totally disagree. So I'd be happy to come and give you some critique page by page on my budget division anyway.
Well, and let me just add I think a bit of frustration some of us have is trying to figure out what the agency requests are, because, you know, they can't talk about anything until the governor's proposals come out, and when the governor's proposals out, well, you know, and we, some of us would like to at least have a better idea of what the agency is seeking. Now, currently, agency requests, you know, are public data after the governor's proposals are out, but that's not part of what's filed with the Commissioner of Finance in the fall. So I don't know. It does. I think some of us would be more appreciative if we could figure out what the agencies really need in doing our part of it. Senator Cohen, welcome to the committee.
Welcome to your committee.
Mr. Chairman, it was not my intent to interfere with the other authors, but I just wanted to respond to the last comment, because part of the legislation I have, which we'll hear someday as part of this package, does require information relative to the agency request, and that's a very big thing with me, because we used to get that. And when we looked at the budget pages, I want to say for the first several years I was a finance division chairman, we would have the agency request, and then we'd have the governor's recommendation, and it was much easier then to understand what was not being done potentially within an agency or a department. And I think that's been I can just tell you from my experience, that's been a very, very big omission in terms of what I've been given to work with over the years. And that's one of the reasons I've been enthused about this package of budget reform legislation.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, would the department be more supportive of this piece if the release of the information were later than October?
Mr. Showalter, yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the release of information being the budget decisions or items that are under discussion for possible initiatives, or
right,
referring to the base information that we're providing currently?
No, I'm talking about, Mr. Chairman, I'm talking about the bill and the information that is required to be released in October. If that were later,
get to amendments.
Make this bill more acceptable to you.
Mr. Showalter.
Before it's presented.
The legislature. Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not sure that the date is so much the question here, because...
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Showalter, so then I just have to rely on people of goodwill to give me things under the table now and then to help us get where we're trying to go. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe what we're trying to do is make sure that the governor has his or her opportunity to put together a proposal and consider all the options. And once that's done, then indeed the agency staff are working on ideas, trying to help flesh out or prepare fiscal notes or other kinds of things that are also part of this omnibus bill. And we're trying to do a dual role, and it's an awkward one, to be sure, but it's also one that hopefully makes sure that we don't end up duplicating work and don't lose things in translation.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Showalter, that's why I asked you if providing this information later, after the governor's had the opportunity to establish his priorities, if that would be more acceptable.
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, and the reason I hesitate is I'm carrying around the 1992-93 book or pages from the book where we did have an agency request column in there, and it looks an awful lot like the governor's rec, except for one or two items that the governor would occasionally split out and say, I want to take credit for that item. And that's why I hesitate for saying the date, because it is it's an ongoing process, and if we did it later, I am suspecting that the administration, whatever administration is in place, would make sure that that agency request looks an awful lot like their governor's request. And that was part of the discussion that led to the dropping of that data, and we'll probably discuss more when we get to Senator Cohen's bill.
Further discussion?
I'll just make a note. During my first term, I was on the state, the Finance Human Services Budget Division, chaired by Senator Samuelson, and one day Finance Chair Senator Merriam came in and sat down next to me, and we're looking at the budget books, and he turned to me and said, do you understand this? And I bluffed. I said, well, I think I do. And he said, well, I don't. So he didn't understand it, and I didn't either. So anyway, okay, any further discussion? As I say, we'll set the bill aside
for now.
Okay, Senator Rest, Senate File 3180.
Mr. Chairman and members, keeping in mind once again the goals and principles that we were operating under in developing and bringing forward these proposals. We are asking for straight talk, open books, honest accounting, realistic budgeting, cutting bureaucracy, rewarding innovation, delivering results, setting clear priorities, and planning for the for the long run. The second bill dealing with fiscal notes, I know that without with being understanding of the difficulties on occasion of developing a fiscal note and sometimes not liking what we see, that there certainly are occasions in which there can be honest disputes between the legislature and either the Department of Finance or the Department of Revenue. When this bill went to the department, went to the tax committee, the appeal process for revenue estimates was taken from the bill, and just the appeals over fiscal notes from the Department of Finance was left in, and it certainly is appropriate for this committee. And what we did in the bill was to, and there will be a lot of discussion on the LCPFP, to reconstitute the fiscal policy heft that it used to carry a number of years ago, and I am particularly reminded of that place where the legislature discussed the Northwest Airlines bailout, or whatever you wanted to call that, in the early 90s, and it was an extremely active legislative commission made up of the budget and tax chairs and the legislative leadership. So what this bill has as a proposal is to set up a uniform procedure for posting the date a fiscal note was requested, the date it was requested, the requested completion date, and the estimated completion date, as well as displaying of those dates on the front page of each completed fiscal note. And I know that I had a bill before you yesterday that, although it, I didn't get it until the hearing, it, the notes on the front of it indicated that it had been the last state agency, and every state agency had to go through it that was involved in that disaster policy bill, that the latest one had been 325, and yet I had not seen it. And I do check that list, and I'm not sure exactly when it was on the computer. I'm not exactly sure when it was proposed, and I know that sometimes we go into a committee and the fiscal note is just off the press, and it's very difficult to defend and or to question at that point when you're just getting it. But there are instances in which the fiscal notes are delivered in with plenty enough time to look at them and say, this just doesn't seem right, and becoming a very, very serious matter. And what this proposes is a way of appealing the impact of a fiscal note, particularly, I think, in a very complicated proposals. So to initiate an appeal, a legislator would probably approach, or it would be a legislator. I mean, the chair of the committee could do it himself or herself. But the chairs of Ways and Means and Finance in the House and the chair of the Finance Committee in the Senate could submit a written notice of appeal to the Commissioner of Finance and to then come before the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy and have a very, very detailed explanation, more so than what we get now, detailed explanation of the assumptions, the conclusions that were identified as being, or the appeal would have to identify the analytical conclusions that were being questioned, and to set forth some reasons in the appeal for contesting those decisions. This is not something that we would anticipate happening with any great frequency, but on important issues, it seemed to us once again, in involving the legislature in the process and making the information transparent and understanding the process of the development of a fiscal note when the result of that fiscal note is really, really counterintuitive, that we the legislature would have a means by which to, quite frankly, have a confrontation in the public and look at the way in which those analyses were developed. And that's what this this proposal would do. And it would be in up to the chair of the committee to consider the issue important enough to issue a challenge.
Sarah Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest. What concerns me when you look at the appeal part of it that's in your bill, that it's going to take an awful lot of time and labor in order to develop any kind of a fiscal note and then send it through the process and decide what it's going to do. And then the second thing that I'm concerned about that is the fee problem that we've developed every time we needed to make sure that we got a bill out, why we had to have a fiscal note, and the fiscal note in almost all instances had some kind of money that that we needed to get. And what we really need in there, I think, is some kind of a process where you can look at and resolve that. So the current system with the fees has produced a situation where nowhere can we make that effective, that the wrong kind of data is used, and the fees end up, we're probably one of the worst in the government that I know of, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are on how to deal with that issue, those issues.
Well, Senator Est. Mr. Chairman and Senator Foley, this particular bill does not deal with how a fiscal note is put together, as opposed to when the chair of the Finance Committee sees the final result of the fiscal note, if it is that on occasion, and it would be a very rare occasion, that the fiscal note's conclusions would be challenged. And the way in which it would be challenged is, and perhaps this is getting to your point about why this amount of a fee as opposed to another amount of a fee, and how do you know that that's the right number to put on something, particularly when it is meant to be strictly a fee and not an addition to a fee that serves another purpose, for example. I mean, fees generally should cover the administrative costs of producing the program and the actual service that's being provided. And when a fee is higher than that, you know, it's used for some ancillary purpose that really doesn't have anything to do with the service that's being provided. And we do that on any number of fees. Marriage licenses come to mind, for example. But the this is more dealing with a procedure and the conclusion, and being able to challenge that and be given the information on how a fiscal note that is being challenged, how it was built, what kind of analysis was done, challenging that analysis, and being able to ask for the process, the procedures, et cetera, to be presented to the legislature. Right? Again, it's a transparency on that we would want, not on a regular basis, because we accept those the fiscal notes routinely. Even when we don't like them, because we say, well, that's too much or that's too little or whatever. But this would be something that would be at a much more uncertain result and challenge to the way in which a fiscal note is presented.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think there's kind of a built-in conundrum in this whole fiscal note issue. We have kind of the Department of Finance, I believe, is the one that does the fiscal notes. No? Each individual department? All right. I see heads nodding.
Every agency.
Agencies.
They have to be approved by the Department of Finance, but the agencies themselves produce it. Yes.
So, what is happening? I think is just the kind of the mixture of clear cut data and policy, and agencies will I think doctor fiscal notes if they want to. Tilt it toward a certain policy or away from a certain policy. So, I think the and of course we do the same thing. I mean, we do the exact same thing. If we have a task force that we want or a report or something, we'll just say the agency should eat it in many cases. And so maybe this is a good layout, but I think where you would tend to get bogged down, because so often we can't get the fiscal notes when we need them, and then this would even drive it longer. Well, you have 5 days.
That's only on the if you want to appeal. If the chair, if Senator Cohen wanted to appeal a fiscal note that had already been delivered, there would be a timeline for dealing with an appeal. I would imagine that this process being available would perhaps make the production of a fiscal note at least in the minds of many legislators, more carefully done, because the last thing a state agency or the Department of Finance wants is a legislature appealing a fiscal note. But keep in mind, and again, this is that Minnesota compared with the rest of the country, and in other states, the final decision on the validity of a fiscal note is made by the legislature. It is not made by the Department of Finance or a similar agency or the Department of Revenue with regard to tax proposals. This is a way of the legislature not just doing informal negotiations, which we do know, is there a way we can get this fiscal note to be less? And so you go through in informal discussions and back and forth and ask for a revised fiscal note, or you point out an actual error that any reasonable person would see is an error. For example, yesterday in the bill that I had before you, there was a $250,000 impact to the Petro Fund that the PCA said was going to happen because they already do 5 recoveries a year. But what they failed to acknowledge is that that's what they're doing now without a federal declaration of a disaster. And that bill did not apply to every disaster that's going on, only those that were under a federal declaration. So even though it wasn't general fund dollars, I would point out to them that they misread the very first sentence of the bill, which says that any of those things had to come after a federal declaration. We're running out of time.
We are. Fiscal notes are advisory. I mean, we do take them seriously, but as Senator Stumpf indicated, sometimes we ignore them. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard? We're going to wrap things up rather quickly. Anybody else who wants to be heard on this particular bill? Senator Cohen, I think we're going to have to take a recess and then after the floor session come back. We're not coming back?
After the floor.
Not today. So we'd be adjourning when we're done here. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Brent Gustafson from the Department of Finance, and I just want to talk briefly about the fiscal note appeal aspect of Senate File 3180. And to express a view of, or just talk a little bit about the current process and some concerns about the proposed process here. One of the things I think that's really important about fiscal notes, and Senator Rest used the word transparency, which in my mind is just music to my ears when I think about fiscal notes, because our bias is towards transparency in fiscal notes, and that is why we emphasize to agencies in the preparation of fiscal notes that they be very clear about their assumption about how the bill will work, their assumptions about how it will be implemented, the methodology they use to arrive at numbers. And all of that transparency creates the basis of a discussion, much like what Senator Rest just described on the disaster bill she had yesterday, that it's that transparency and clarity of the numbers development that creates the basis for a discussion, and in that case resulted in a revised fiscal note. The facts are that in the last couple of years, like 6 to 8% of fiscal notes are officially revised. Those are notes that are delivered to the legislature and pulled back, and changes are made. And in some cases, those are significant changes in assumptions or methodology. Sometimes they're simple mistakes. But it's why the process as it exists has multiple checks. It has a agency preparation, a finance department review, and when a fiscal note is completed, it is first delivered to the author and to the staff associated with that bill, that there are multiple reviews before it is generally available to the public and the legislature as a whole, to make sure that there's that review and that the legislature may decide, Senator, or Mr. Chairman, as you noted, that it is advisory. If the finance department has a fiscal note of $500,000 and chairman decides in his division that $300,000 is what will be appropriated, that's a decision about, or an appeal, if you will, of I don't agree or I can't afford that level of fiscal note. I think, in general, the question we have is the process as it currently exists, how well is that working, and the discipline involved with fiscal notes currently. We feel like in a lot of ways the process does work, like the bill Senator referenced yesterday, where a review occurred and changes were made, and I think there's general agreement and comfort with what the outcome was. We have other instances where the process isn't working so well. We have the Senate language of House File 1812, where there are numbers associated with that where we don't have a fiscal note to back it up, and we have concerns that the Senate is carrying savings that aren't backed up by a fiscal note. So I think the shared interest, certainly on the part of the Department of Finance and legislative fiscal staff and the Finance Committee as a whole, is the discipline on the process and, as Senator Ress has noted, the transparency of that process is certainly where our interest lies.
Does anybody else want to be heard on this bill?
Thank you.
Senator Ress, does this bill need a fiscal note? It might.
You'll have to ask the chair of the Finance Committee.
Okay. Senator Cohen, anything right before we adjourn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and for those members here, what we'd like to do is, we won't meet again today. We'll meet, I'll have to talk to Jane, see what our schedule is like next week. So we'll have other meetings next week. We'll have another meeting to pick up these bills, finish discussion with Senator Rest. We also would like to hear from Senator Dahl and Senator Sharon relative to bills they have. Then I can describe the particular bills I have. There are people who would like to testify on the package of bills, and then I'll present the delete everything amendment, and then we'll have discussion and amendments.
Anything further? We have session in a couple of minutes, so meeting's adjourned. Thank you.